Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 101.
This week on the podcast, Brent and I forget to wear green due to early morning earthquake panic.
CNN strikes ratings gold with its new poop cruise, the Malaysia Airlines supernatural conspiracy disaster.
Sham elections defined this week in ex-communist countries acting a fool.
And President Obama appears on a web comedy talk show and offers a masterclass in knowing your audience.
Scott Brown is living super free these days.
And from lion hearts to turkey trot tater tot hot dishes, it was a big week in congressional food not fit for human consumption.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And I'm going to cut it off there because I feel like I always go on and on and on about this and it gets
That's
boring.
That's it. That's the place.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, we hope you had a good one.
Right. I did nothing to celebrate.
No.
I accidentally wore green shoes and everyone was really impressed with me.
I didn't.
And I was like,
I wore a blue shirt and then was accused of not knowing that I was... Because it's sort of like, I'm wearing it right now. It's teal-ish.
Right, yes.
Sort of.
It's Brent's favorite shirt.
So then I was just sort of like accused... Of half-assing it, because it was, like, almost great, but I wasn't thinking about it this morning.
No, I didn't find out it was St. Patrick's Day until I was driving to work, and I was on the phone with my mother, and she referred to it as if I already knew, and I was like, oh.
Yeah. My dog is currently sporting more...
yeah, your Ray-Ray's looking quite festive.
Yeah, she was a doggy daycare today, and I picked her up, and she was wearing a clover, green clover.
Why would they assume that she was Irish?
Well, she's not.
Yeah, I know. She's a Chihuahua Dachshund mix.
I mean...
She's sort of like a Spanish German-Mexican
yeah.
sort of combination of some sort.
Yeah. No.
She can't be trusted. And as is, I think, becoming sort of a tradition in this day and age, mayors across the country, but specifically in New York and Boston, have bowed out of the St. Patrick's Day festivities because the St. Patrick's Day parade organizers, like every dumb person,
yeah.
still are hating gays.
Like, come on.
Just stop it.
I get it. The Roman Catholics, they're, you know, but like, just
they're
come
throwing
on.
A parade in a public place. You can't
right.
throw hate parades.
Well, it's like I said to you just a second ago, like, you know, the Irish are a bunch of drunks.
Sure.
You know who else are drunks?
Yeah.
Gays.
Yeah, that's who.
Nobody likes to drink like the gays.
So,
and when you're excluding them from
a drinking,
you know,
holiday, a holiday that is only celebrated by drinking,
to be have beer yeah. at, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, you've done the wrong thing. And
yeah.
it's getting more momentum, I think, every year, because this year Guinness and Heineken refused to sponsor
right.
it.
Like, once the beer sponsors are out of your beer drinking
yeah.
holiday,
then
you really might need to start rethinking your situation.
That's the sign. That's
it.
When you know.
Yeah, you've gone too far.
And I sort of feel like, because St. Patrick's Day is one of the fakest holidays out there, it could be divorced from the Roman Catholic Church quite easily. The Roman Catholic Church did not ever set up a holiday that was celebrated by having a drunken parade and drinking green beer and eating green bagels.
I mean, yeah, I think that we could just sort of, like, now at this point, quit thinking that it has anything to do with the church. There's no reason to think that.
In other Roman Catholic countries, they're not celebrating it quite the way that we do here.
No.
This is a holiday only in America. It's a holiday that became sort of, like, famous for nostalgic reasons abroad.
Yeah.
In, you know, in, like, Ireland and places like
yeah.
that. But it was a big deal in America before it was a big deal in Ireland, and that should tell you something.
Right. It's a big deal, like you said, when the, you know, I mean, it's like Bill de Blasio, like, okay, great, he's not going to that.
Right.
But, like, the mayor in Boston, like, that's some serious business, because, like, that's...
Showing some...
That's
real
where the
muscle.
Irish are.
Yeah, that's where they live.
Right.
That's probably the most important holiday of the year.
It might be. Yeah.
I was going to say in Ireland, in Boston.
Not in Ireland.
In Boston, Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah. In any case, we had, this day was notable for different reasons in LA.
The reason that we couldn't have possibly known that it was St. Patrick's Day
today
was
walking around in a fucking blind haze because we had to wake up at 6:30 in the morning by a terrifying earthquake.
How terrifying was that?
It was
crazy.
Really scary.
And I'm sure that if you saw Facebook, then you know that everybody was blowing out about it.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, I've lived in LA 11 years. You've lived here a long time.
Yeah.
We have been through earthquakes that are sort of this big, but for whatever reason, I think the epicenter was closer.
Yeah.
But, like, it really shook.
It shook.
The
and I think
shit
that we didn't
it.
Even have as bad, have it as bad as they did in the Valley, because I saw posts from people in the Valley, like, their walls were cracking, and, like,
yeah.
you know, I know someone who had two giant cracks running up her walls at the end of that. This was definitely the closest 4-point-something earthquake that I've ever had
yeah.
in LA.
Yes.
The only earthquake that I can really compare it to is I was once in the Tokyo airport for all of, like, 4 hours changing planes.
Sure.
And was there just in time to experience a terrifying earthquake. And it went on forever, and it was really strong, and everyone in Tokyo was like, ah, ha, ha, earthquake, acting like nothing was happening.
No.
Or giggling about it.
That's not
which is not the right answer.
Nope.
So I was standing next to this huge glass of wall, wall of glass, uh-huh. wasn't a glass of wall at all, huge wall of glass, worrying that I was about to die, yeah. obviously, as everyone is giggling to themselves about no. some nonsense. This was on that level, though. This was, it went on a really long time.
I know.
It was really strong. It sounded really loud and scary.
I know. Well, and that's the thing, like, you had to feel this one. This wasn't like, a lot of times, like, the right. earthquakes, especially if they're, like, in the middle of the night, sort of like, oh, did you feel the earthquake the next morning? And then there's, like, a discussion amongst everyone about who did, who didn't, whether they woke up, whether they panicked, and that was sort of, like, the topic of discussion. Right. The topic of discussion today was, holy fucking shit. Were you terrified? Like, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. how panicked were you?
Yeah.
It wasn't a, like, I was talking to my mom on the way home from work, said, did you feel the earthquake?
Like, yes.
Yeah, I'm alive.
Right. Thanks for checking.
Like,
well, and there was all of that really funny footage of local news reporting,
oh, yeah. like taking cover like under KTLA the desk, KTLA
taking cover under the desk, and then CBS, like they all sit and remain like nothing's going on, but the background is like waving wildly.
I know. I just like laid in my bed, sort of like with my arms sprawled out. Well, basically. And you
still have the danger of having stuff in your room. I just moved, so at least I had nothing really around right. me except a mattress on the floor.
Yeah, I have something hanging over my over my bed. Yeah, you could have died. Yeah, it's a canvas. So it would have been fine, probably. But like,
You could have died. We have no way of knowing.
Nope.
So, in any case, there were no reports of actual damage, in case you were wondering whether it was that serious.
I guess they say that it has to generally be over a 5.
Yeah.
For damage
I would imagine that that's the case.
So...
I hope, though, it's not, like, a lot of people say that when it gets unseasonably warm, as it was this weekend, that that's a time that there's going to be earthquakes. Earthquake weather is a topic of discussion in LA a lot, and I'm not sure that it's a real thing.
Right.
Every time it's warm, everyone goes on about earthquake weather.
Yeah, well, it was hot.
But it was really hot this weekend.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Other mysterious phenomenon.
This is... continues to be my favorite news story of all time. I'm obsessed with this. I'm getting into the territory where it's maybe becoming a little borderline, you know, crazy person obsessed with this. I'm as obsessed with this Malaysian Airlines flight as CNN is, basically. Which
yeah, Brent is running a one-man CNN shop over here.
I am. And I don't, like, it's getting to the point where, like, I love talking about this with, like, people at work because other people are, like, also as obsessed. Right. And, like, I feel like it's sort of, like, getting to the point where, like, it's sort of, like, it's like the story that, like, you know, when you catch a fish that just sort of, like, you know, get every time you tell it, it's sort of, like, I just feel like everybody has their sort of, like, own set of facts that goes along with the story, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, whenever you, did you hear about when they found out that, like, 12 hours after it, somebody spotted it flying through the, you know, just sort of, like, there's everybody has their own sort
of, like, a giant game of telephone that's been going on for
exactly. Everybody's got their crackpot theories on it. And
it's like a field day for conspiracy theorists.
Right. Well, because when we talked about it last week, we were sort of like only in day 3 of it. And I think they had like just sort of found out that like it had veered off course or something like that. And they had no facts last week.
Not like we have this week.
No. We've got a multitude of facts this week.
None of them lead us to the plane, though.
Not a one. Seriously. Not a one. No. Like, it's just so crazy that this could... They're calling it sort of, like, the biggest mystery in modern aviation. Like, that's just, like, a point... I mean,
it's one of the mysteries that's out there.
It is. Are there a lot of modern aviation mysteries?
I hope not. I'm already scared enough of flying. I don't need that on my plate.
don't study the others.
Yeah, seriously. And now, they've just got... They're getting desperate.
Right.
They started investigating all of the passengers on the plane, because now they're just like, well, someone on the plane knows something.
They're focusing on... the pilots.
Right.
And also there was a guy who is a, he's a flight engineer.
Right.
Not for this airline, but for like a private jet company or something. But he was one of the passengers on the plane. So they're looking at the pilots and him, because basically what has been sort of, we've come to one conclusion that we've come to is that someone intentionally steered the course off track and knew enough about how to do so and knew enough about the systems, because basically like the communication systems were manually shut down, we have since learned. So someone intentionally did this.
Someone with knowledge of aviation.
Right, exactly. We don't necessarily know whether it was...
Someone who would be able to use the word transponder and not giggle to themselves, because I can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, basically... they have, they're showing that it could have gone as far as thousands of miles.
Yeah, they're
to
saying
the west they, after they, it was sort it got, of like initially like headed east.
Some sort of radar.
Yeah, it pinged like satellites, like up to like 8 hours
after.
The next morning at like 8 o'clock, mm-hmm, and it had like taken off at like at 1 a.m. I think actually. But they still don't really know that radar. The way that radar was just sort of like a ping, basically. Like it wasn't necessarily. I don't even think it was like a satellite something, but it wasn't.
Yeah, and they weren't able to tell the location.
It's not like the type of thing where you can like track where it was. It was just sort of like basically like emitted a signal to it, which was sort of like, you know, they could recognize that was the plane.
Yeah, exactly.
But they didn't know where it's going. They know it sort of has gone. Went back west, sort of over the Indian Ocean, which is where they're looking now. 26 countries are looking?
That's too many countries to not know.
It's like, a lot of countries.
If you need to search 26 countries for an airplane, you have just lost the airplane.
Right.
There's, well, at that point, anyone could know where they are. Like, that doesn't help anyone know
but
anything.
There's
so many exciting theories.
There's so many exciting theories. I mean, people have sort of thought that maybe it, like, blew up.
Right.
Or, I mean, maybe that it was a suicide mission of some sort. Anyway, but there's some really interesting theories, too. Like, the U.S. hasn't thrown out that the plane landed somewhere. There's, like, a series of islands, like, in the Indian Ocean that, like, could sort
Nobody
of...
Nobody knows
but,
any...
But it's also a very large plane, though. It's a 777, so it needs, like, a large runway.
Right.
Like, it can't just sort of, like, you know, go just into, like, a, you know, a quarter-mile jungle someplace and just sort of, like, decide to sit down. Like, that
I
can't do that.
I feel like, though, there's something to this theory only because... I just can't imagine a world in which a suicide mission person decides to fly a plane for another 7 hours after they've...
Well, that's the thing.
You don't need to fly 7 hours to find a building to fly a plane into.
And there were no distress signals.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the U.S. is so heavily involved, and I think also all of these other countries, too, because, like, if that is...
In case
even,
they want to be sort of on the lookout for that plane.
Right, because, like, that...
reappears in a new capacity.
Right, exactly. Because that plane, at that point, could be used for, you know, you... put nukes on it.
Yeah.
You do, you know, I mean, it's like, can...
Once you have
the
just a 777
you could,
on
right,
your hands.
At your own, yeah.
You're just up to no good.
That's all you
Nothing
can
good
to.
Can come from that.
No, you're not going to go, you didn't do all of this to take the plane out later joyriding.
Right, no,
right?
Exactly.
Like, that's not
a thing.
That's not it.
No.
So, but they're also, like, this is serious. This was, as serious as... where I found all of my information, which was CNN, because this is where you go to get the information if you want information about the plane.
If you're looking for serious information that's actually serious, you won't find information about this story.
No, but if you want
information facts about what's going on,
only about this story, then you go to CNN.com.
Yeah.
A meteor could have hit it.
Yeah, there was apparently a meteor that was reported in the area around the time that the flight was flying.
Right.
And no one's ruled out that... Here's a question I have. If a meteor hit it, could the meteor have just been passing through, and could the meteor have knocked it out of the atmosphere, sort of? Could it be floating in space right now? Could this plane be, like, doing some sort of... Could it be a spaceship right now?
Maybe. Sure. I don't know.
Just flying through space.
But, like, that doesn't sort of, like, answer all of the questions about, like, why it turned back westward. Like, was it trying to dodge the meteor?
Right.
Like, I mean, like, that's not a thing. And if it successfully dodged it and flew for 7 hours, did the meteor re-find it again? Like, later?
Like, tracking? The meteor tracking?
I don't know. That sounds wrong.
Well, and this is such a weird airline for this to happen to.
I know.
This is Malaysia Air is such a random airline.
Well, what I have heard about that...
I bet you've heard something.
I was going to say, this could also be a made-up theory by someone.
Yeah.
But I guess that they sort of... Malaysia has a history of not really being super great with the letting people on flights situation.
Oh.
Because it... All of the... So there's also the two people with the stolen passports, which is odd.
Right.
So that's a whole other layer. I think we did know that
last
week.
Yeah,
we talked about that last week.
And,
but they sort of had to choose... whenever there's a passport stolen, they go onto, like, the Interpol list, like, where you should be able to, like... Those people wouldn't have been able to board a plane in most countries.
But they were able to in Malaysia.
But they were able to do it in Malaysia.
Yeah.
And so that sort of is like a situation here, and I think that probably will ultimately get addressed because of this as well.
Yeah.
But like, they would not have been able to leave the United States with those passports.
Right.
So it does sort of make sense that it's Malaysia Air, because like, I think that they sort of had to choose wisely as to what country they were going to be able to get on this you know, plane
on. I would imagine that if Malaysia has that reputation, there's a chance that a fake passport could be on any flight.
Well, that's true.
Like, if you're just flying out of Malaysia, chances are you're on a flight with someone with a stolen passport. Any plane that took off from Malaysia could have this problem.
But isn't it so weird that they're now focusing on the pilots and the other thing? Because, like, the weird thing about the stolen passports is that those people both had stolen passports that they got at the same place, but they got them, like, a year and a half apart. So it seems very planned. Fishy. Like, that they would end up on the same flight when they had both, like, separately stolen passports, like, at different points in time over the span of years.
Though, I think, because this involved such, like, a high level of expertise, and, I mean, maybe, you know, I don't know how much they've looked into the passengers in terms of their own flight experience, but this is information you couldn't just, like, know.
No, you're right.
You know, like, it's the people that went and flew the planes into the buildings on 9/11 had gone to flight school.
Right.
They were able to immediately identify that they had been training to do this.
Yeah.
Like, if we haven't figured out that anyone on that plane was training to do some sort of weird flying mission...
Right, then you have to...
They didn't just Google how do you, like, you know... Right.
So you have
interrupt
to
interrupt the transponder on a, you know, airplane. Yeah. I mean, maybe they did, and maybe that information is available, and maybe they were able to not laugh when they said transponder, but it sounds like a fake spaceship term, and there's no way to talk about it without laughing.
I know, exactly. There's this other theory that, like, lithium batteries played a part in, like, in this, which
that
I don't fully
me.
Understand, but that worries me as well. Like,
it seems like lithium batteries are being used for a lot of things. Are we all... Is everything going to fall apart? Because they can just mysteriously disappear whatever you're in?
I guess they've been... Lithium batteries have been blamed in previous crashes. I guess that they, like, you know, blow up a plane. I don't know.
Well, what else would they
do? It's not what you're looking for. Don't have those.
No.
That's going to be
if
the
that's
case.
A problem.
Yeah.
That's like... There was this medicine that I was on for a long time. And then one day, they decided... They did a study, and they found out that one of the side effects was sudden death. And everyone went off the medicine. Because you're not trying to just suddenly die... If sudden death is the side effect of your medicine, you should stop taking it. If your if lithium batteries just self-destruct from time to time, you shouldn't put them on airplanes. It's a terrible idea.
Totally is. But the best theory of all came from, of course, CNN.
Yeah.
Because, first off, CNN is doing... They're like, kicking it old school, like, back with, like, the poop cruise style, basically. Where they're catching a lot of flack from, like, media watchdogs, basically. But it's... killing in the ratings because it's bonkers story.
Right.
And, you know, so they're really, they're going with it.
Yeah.
They're, all of the anchors are using this toy model airplane, like as a prop on set to sort of like illustrate point. They're flying this toy plane around as if they're like a 4-year-old.
They're crazy. CNN, I feel like, has been doing some great prop work in the last few years. And was it CNN where after, when they found Saddam Hussein, who had been hiding in that hole in the ground or whatever?
Yeah.
There was a CNN anchor. I think it was CNN. It was either CNN or Fox News, but I think it was CNN. Because I remember it. I remember being like, really? You're going to do this? Who, like, built a... They had, like, a scale model of the hole and, like, climbed into the hole.
I love that. They probably did that.
Yeah, this...
Well, they also had the holograms. Remember?
The holograms.
The election holograms.
How could
holograms?
I forget the holograms?
Those are the best.
Why don't they just all report the news in hologram?
I know.
Seems like they could do that.
But Don Lemon, bless his heart.
Yeah. Bless his heart.
Yesterday was interviewing some guy, and he said, we go to church, the supernatural power of God. People are saying to me, why aren't you talking about the possibility? And I'm just putting it out there that something odd happens to this plane, something beyond our understanding.
I asked Brent about this, and he was like, well, they have 24 hours of time to fill, so a lot of crazy shit's getting said.
Right. So his guest, who's Brad Meltzer, who...
Oh. Brad Meltzer is like he writes like thriller novels, like airplane trashy thriller novels.
I love it.
I think Brad Meltzer writes, it's like the kind of book that you would take on an airplane, and it talks about Interpol and some fake jewel theft or something.
All right, okay, great. Anyway, so he...
Or a hitman.
Not to be outdone.
No.
Brad Meltzer really picked up the ball and ran with it.
Yeah.
He says, people roll their eyes at conspiracy theories, but what conspiracy theories do is they ask the hardest, most outrageous questions sometimes, but every once in a while, they're right.
That sounds like a log, like the tagline of a book he wrote.
It does. Yeah, that's not what conspiracy theories do.
No.
They don't ask the hard questions.
No. Nope.
They ignore
the
hard
crazy
questions.
Questions.
They ignore the answers to the hard questions.
Right.
And they
and
go
ask
off
crazy unrelated questions that are very rarely right.
Yeah. He described the opposite
the reason
of what conspiracy theories
that conspiracy
do.
Theories are always laughed at as a the reason that you discredit someone by calling their idea a conspiracy theory is cuz conspiracy theories by their very nature are not legitimate theories.
Yeah.
If you are someone who's getting blamed for being a conspiracy theorist and you're positing a very reasonable idea, you know, concept, then you are being slandered by the person that's calling you a conspiracy right. theorist. It's like, if you're like, you know, if you're one of the inside job people who believes that 9/11 was an inside job or whatever,
yes.
like, most of America is calling you a conspiracy theorist because that is sort of a crazy notion. And the people that sort of are willing to buy partway into that theory are not calling it a conspiracy theory. They're just calling it an idea. So, like, don't mix your words up, Brad Meltzer. I've read Brad Meltzer books. I'm not impressed.
Really?
Yeah, of course. I've read every book.
Fair enough.
In any case, the Malaysia airline story has been dominating the fake news.
Yeah.
The real news is being dominated by this Crimea vote.
Oh, God.
Which is as bonkers as you could ever hope for. Ex-communist countries are just out there being literal parodies of themselves at this point.
Yeah.
Ukraine is not just, like, ironically, like, being a parody. Like, it is no. full-on a parody yeah. of a Soviet satellite state.
Yeah, it is. Because this Crimea vote was just...
It was a sham.
It was a total sham. And everybody knows it was a sham, except for them and Russia. And I think that actually Russia probably knows, but they just don't care.
Russia doesn't. Everything is a sham in Russia. There's no reason to worry about that if you're yeah. Russia. They voted to join Russia,
they had
by
to.
The way. They had to, because there were only two options
they
on the ballot.
They couldn't vote to not join them.
The first option was, the first question was, are you in favor of the reunification of Crimea with Russia as part of the Russian Federation? So you could vote yes or no on that. Mm-hmm. Or the other option that you could vote for was, are you in favor of restoring the 1992 Constitution and the status of Crimea as a part of Ukraine? However, the 1992 Constitution, basically says that Crimea is sort of like an independent state within within Ukraine, and that they can do whatever they want. And since the parliament there is in favor of joining Russia, it would just be like a more boring way of getting, like a more sort of procedural way of yeah. joining Russia again. Because if they were an independent entity within Ukraine, they could just decide to join Russia, as yeah. they've done.
Yeah,
so this was just in favor of repeating what they just did.
Yes. So they had two options.
Both of which were yes.
Yep. That's it. So that's what they went with.
So they went with yes.
It passed.
It passed with flying colors.
Yeah, like
obviously,
97% of the
obviously
vote.
Obviously, everyone is calling it a fake vote because there wasn't an option to vote no.
Yeah,
but
the entire world community is like,
it
no.
sounds like a sus. It
Sorry,
sounds
guys.
Like a suspect thing.
Yeah.
But they're going with it. They're on
yeah.
it. They've
yeah.
applied to join Russia, so they're, I guess, waiting to hear back about their application.
I guess.
Know.
I don't know. I just sort of like...
I still don't care about this.
I still just don't really care. I'm sorry.
If Crimea wants to join Russia, even if it's a fake attempt to join... Like,
other than just being sort of like a dramatic thing that's happening in the
right.
world, if...
It's
any,
an exciting story,
if
for
any
sure.
of you listeners can tell me why specifically I need to care. Because I don't... I realize sure. that Putin is probably, like, up to trying to, like, get the old
yeah,
Soviet Union back
nonsense.
Together. And he's trying to be sneaky or whatever. But, like, if his big major play is, like, to
for
take
Crimea?
Part... Like, the,
part
a,
of Ukraine.
A Massachusetts-sized... Isn't that what they
yeah,
we said
swath
it was or something?
Of Ukraine.
Swath of Ukraine, then...
And in the process, alienating the rest of Ukraine. The rest of Ukraine
and the rest
wants
of the world.
Nothing
like,
to do
all
with
of
him.
The West.
He's not re-Sovietizing the rest of Ukraine because they're desperate to join the EU. That's
so,
what the whole thing is
like,
about.
Just give him Ukraine and just let him, just let Russia and Ukraine make a dirty go of it. I mean, like, that's Russia and Ukraine is not some sort of, like, new power couple.
No,
okay? That's not a thing.
Wait, it's not, like, he's not, like, in there also, like, trying to take over, like, Poland and Germany.
Right.
Like,
and, right.
And I'm going to get concerned when he goes after Germany.
Right,
that's
exactly.
a problem.
And he's not.
Poland, even. I'm not trying to have him be
and
up
it's like
in Poland.
Like we said last
this,
week,
but,
he's not doing this by, you know, sort of mass murdering everyone.
Right.
Like, that's not
They're
his plan yet.
They're having fake votes, which is the Russian way. They couldn't be more Russian.
Yeah.
They tried.
Yeah.
In any case, we're about to slap some individuals
Super
with sanctions.
Fake sanctions.
It's a very specific kind of sanction slapping.
Us in the EU are both, like, sanctioned, like, 12 people. Like, Russian...
10 Russian lawmakers.
Russian lawmakers and, like, some Ukrainians or something like
yeah.
that. Like,
and then it includes some advisors to Putin. And then a bunch of it includes some, like some of the leaders of the secessionist
yeah.
movement. People are pretty proud of being sanctioned. The ones
yeah.
who are
all the Russians are like, Could yeah, the U.S.
Showed
hates
him.
Me.
Exactly.
It's like they're 10 minutes, or
yeah.
15 minutes.
So I guess,
right?
One of them
or
said,
10, probably 10
"I consider the decision of the Washington administration as a recognition of my service to Russia." So if anyone is restarting the Cold War at this point, it's us.
Yeah.
because this is nonsense.
Right.
Well, this and is it's just like, symbolic like, sanctioning. What, it's I
know,
like, stop that.
It's symbolic sanctioning, and it's also sort of like, you know, there's sanctions like, okay, this guy can't enter the U.S. anymore. It's not like,
yeah,
like because like, when you right. sanction someone, it's sort of like you're trying to cut them off from the world community, but like taking something away that either you have been giving them or sort of like cutting them off or whatever. But it's not like, it's like,
something that they
it's
want.
It's not like these 10 people were like getting personal aid from the U.S. Right. anyway. So it's like, you can't sanction people who aren't already sort of like benefiting yeah. from your sort right. of presence.
Yeah. And I you guess, can't, sort of like you can't have economic sanctions no. against individuals. So it's not like their quality of life is going to be
no.
in any way affected by these sanctions. They just no. can't come to the
also,
U.S.
Also, they're local heroes.
They didn't want to come to the U.S. because they're fucking heroes in Russia now right. because we sanctioned them. Yeah. They don't need to.
Yeah.
They're winning. So yeah. this is a crazy, preposterous right. notion. John McCain had some comments on it.
Right. Now, he said something that was really hilarious, and then he sort of went on to say, which I didn't pull out of here, but basically what he said, he says Russia is a gas station masquerading as a country, which is super hilarious.
Yes.
But he also sort of, like, then went on to say about, like, how we need to, like, reassess our whole sort of relationship with Russia, and that, like,
right.
you know, I mean, John McCain is super into starting the Cold War again, basically, yeah. because, like,
oh, well,
that's...
he feels comfortable in the Cold War. The Cold War makes sense to him.
Yeah.
He remembers how you're supposed to act in a
well,
Cold War.
Well, he knows. I mean, he referenced a lot of the old Soviet countries when he was running for president.
Yes, exactly.
You remember that?
Yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, wasn't he talking about Czechoslovakia?
He mentioned Czechoslovakia. Yeah, he had a lot. Yeah, I think Yugoslavia got mentioned at one point.
Right. So it's taking him back to the time that he remembers.
Yeah.
It's right now.
A time.
Before his senile days kicked in. He right. really knew all about the...
The Cold War, Soviet
the
Union.
Soviet Union.
And their aspirations.
Yeah.
Another person who knew a lot about them is the Chancellor of Germany,
yeah.
Angela Merkel. I was wondering why she was so front and center in all this business, because yeah. I was sort of like, I mean, I know Germany fashions itself to be some sort of economic and world leader at this point.
Yeah.
That's concerning, obviously. But I was sort of like, why would she specifically be a person who's involved? She's just a German person. Like, that's any, like, what, you know, it's not like the president of France is on the front lines yeah. of any of this. But it turns out that she's from East Germany. So, in fact, she was a Soviet citizen upon her birth.
Yeah.
And she speaks Russian fluently, and her and Putin kind of have a little
yeah.
friendship. I mean, I don't know if you could call it that now.
I don't know.
But
yeah, who
she's
knows?
A person who can talk to Putin and not just talk at him, but, like, speak to him in his own language and explain things.
Yeah.
And so, and he, huh? They apparently sort of have
yeah,
a,
they have
working,
like a good
relationship.
Working relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's sort weird, of fascinating, right? isn't it, that she's...
Yeah.
That I forget this about Germany sometimes, because they're so busy at this point leading the world in vacation days and other fun things like that.
I know.
You forget, and also leading the world in terms of the history of mass murder being the only thing that they're known for.
Sure.
So you forget about this weird yeah. era of East Germany.
Yeah, she's probably got some
East Berlin.
She's probably got some advice for Putin.
Yeah. Well, she like it's weird to me that there is like a whole bunch. There's a whole group of German citizens who were raised in a Soviet state.
Yeah, that is weird.
Just like Germans in the Soviet state.
yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And they just had like, they were like in Germany, surrounded by Germany. It's like West Hollywood. Surrounded by LA, but we're totally. In our own
city,
little
yeah.
city here.
Mm-hmm. Also, are we supposed to be calling her Angela Merkel?
I feel like... I can't do it.
No, I can't either. And every time I say it, I'm like, that sounds wrong. But I hear people saying that. And
well,
not,
that's how I
even
how
when
say
other
it.
People say it, I'm just sort of like, don't be doing
but
that.
But
like,
I wonder if it's one of those moments. Like, remember when we had that conversation about... Sada Ramirez.
Oh yeah,
and she's like going yeah. around introducing herself. This is a Grey's Anatomy actor, by the way, in case you're not following.
Yeah,
she's going around introducing herself that way, and so right. I was, and to the point where you sort of, if like it feels like you have to say Sada because that's like what everyone, including her co-stars, calls her.
Right.
But it feels too silly to do because her name is Sarah, and let's just get over it.
Exactly.
If you were speaking Spanish to her, it would make sense to say
yeah.
Sada.
Yeah.
Because that's how you would say it in Spanish.
Yeah.
But like. It's
we're
like,
not.
I'm not correcting French people when they call me Lila or whatever, because they can't say Lila. I get it.
right.
That's fine. But, like, if people are calling me that in English, then I'm like, please call me Lila. That's my name.
right.
But, like, when people in other languages try to butcher my name, I don't care. They can
yeah.
do whatever they want.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. In any case, in other exciting vote news.
Oh, this is more exciting vote news.
More exciting
really,
vote
probably.
News.
Yeah.
Well, this is the only 100% turnout that...
Ever.
We'll ever see.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not in America where...
No.
I mean, this was not in America, obviously, because we would never have 100% voting
no.
turnout, fake or real. Kim Jong-un has been elected unanimously.
Yes.
For, I guess, life of Korean dictatorship, North Korean dictatorship. I'm not really sure.
It's the first. They always have these sort of like sham elections every 5 years.
Yeah, they love a good sham election.
Everybody, 100% of the people vote.
You have to. You probably get murdered if you
don't. You don't get a choice as to who you get to vote for because there's only one person on the ballot. So you either vote yes or no, and you always vote yes because you don't want to be killed.
You're not trying to be killed, yeah.
So that happens. But this was his first election because he took over in 2011, you know, just by being the son of
Kim Jong-il. The son of the last guy.
And so, yeah, he really, he did well.
Yeah.
Had a good showing.
The news article, my favorite line in it is, North Korea also typically puts turnout nationwide at over 99%. Mm, oh, yes. Really?
Over 99. Why not just go for it?
Well, people in labor camps can't vote, you know.
That's true.
Know your audience.
Yeah.
And anyway, there was something awesome that happened this week.
A couple things exciting happened.
But this has already been pretty awesome. Everything we've told you so far has been pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But none of it is as awesome as Obama going on Between Two Ferns this week.
So hilarious.
If you are a person who does not watch Funny or Die frequently, you might not even know what Between Two Ferns is.
Yeah.
I imagine parents don't know what Between Two Ferns is. It's Zach Galifianakis' weird fake talk show.
It's a fake public access talk show.
Yeah, it's a fake public access talk show where he acts like super disinterested in what everyone is trying to say.
Yeah.
And like is generally insulting to his guests.
Yes.
And they get a lot of great guests because he's a guy who like knows a lot of people in Hollywood or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
But Obama went on there shilling Obamacare.
Right.
And it was apparently this thing that was, you know, everyone obviously goes on there when they have something to promote. You're not just like going on talk shows for the fun of it all. But apparently, the administration gave them pretty free rein to sort of do whatever they want because there were a lot of jabs.
There were a lot of jabs. Like, you know, obviously everybody was sort of like, oh, it was awkward. He was just shilling for Obamacare. But, like, even when he got to that part, like, it wasn't awkward. It was super hilarious. But, like, also, even when he got to that part, like, you know, they sort of, like, joked about, oh, you're obviously here to, like, you know, to plug something. What's your plug?
Tell me what it is.
And he's like, yeah, it's Obamacare or whatever. And then Zach Galifianakis is like, oh, is that thing that doesn't work?
Yeah.
I mean, like, so it's not as if it was sort of like a total, you know,
fake
fluff piece.
The producer was being interviewed, I think, on New York Magazine or something like that. And he was sort of like, we had said the whole time that if it didn't feel like a regular episode, we didn't really want to do it because we didn't want to be sort of like,
to
mess with our kind of, you know, our shtick. Because it's like a fake public access show that is on the internet. They don't need to do sponsored material that way, probably. But so they were afraid that the administration would give them a lot of sort of ground rules for things they could and couldn't talk about. He ragged on everything.
He did.
I mean, it was
really funny.
It was really funny. Yeah. And it worked. It was an attempt to get young people to sign up for Obamacare.
Right, because that's who's watching Between Two Ferns.
Right.
Like, let's face
it. Well, and the right got all nuts about it, and I was sort of like,
Bill O'Reilly
they don't
was like,
want young
Abraham
people to know
Lincoln
about this.
Would not have gone on Between Two Ferns.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Well, you don't know.
He couldn't, because the internet hadn't been invented at the time.
He might have. He tried. Might have tried to end slavery on Between Two Ferns. We don't know. We don't know what he would have done.
We don't know what he would have done, because we couldn't possibly know, because the internet hadn't been invented. In any case, it drew a lot of traffic to the Obamacare site.
Because
the genius of it is it was an internet show that was sure to go viral, and so people were already at their computers.
Well, 11 million people watched the clip, and the day that was up, 40%,
they had a 40% spike
in
visitors at healthcare.gov. Yeah. And obviously we assume that most of those visitors were younger.
Yeah. And last week, or the week before, we told you that 4.2 million people had signed up for Obamacare through the end of February. As of today, we have now found out that 5 million people have signed up.
Yeah.
So that's 800,000 people in the last 17 days, which is at a rate of 50,000 a day. They've had their most busiest days the last few days since December 23rd, which was the end of the cutoff to be able to get your insurance to start on
January 1st.
So they're really thinking that they might get to the 6 million goal that they set, because if they keep up the rate that they're going, they're going to be just shy of it. But everybody seems to think that 50,000 per day will kick up a little bit as it gets even closer.
Yeah.
Which is what we've always said. And that's what everybody has always said.
Trying to sign up at the last minute.
Right. So they might just do it.
Make the goal. Yeah.
Wow.
That's with a website that didn't function. So
after all of that.
Just imagine people. Yeah. People wanted healthcare, it turned out.
Yep. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
So for all you Between Two Ferns haters.
Yeah. All you.
Mm-hmm.
Suck it.
God.
In any case, where things fall apart is when we go
to Congress.
Unemployment
as always.
Congress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once we turn our glare to Congress,
it's like
things really go south fast.
As always, yeah. They're giving us trouble on an unemployment extension vote. Right.
Well, I mean, we've been sitting on this forever. I mean, the last extension sort of had expired months ago,
yeah,
I think,
we're
right?
Just like and not, yeah, we've just been freewheeling it with no safety net for anyone.
Nobody wants to deal with it. Finally, they have five Republicans who are co-sponsoring this bill, which is being paid for with something.
Oh my God. Something horrifying.
Something horrifying.
We don't know what it is. No. So if you're thinking horrifying, like cutting food stamps, that's not what we're talking about.
No. I can't hardly say it. It's called pension smoothing.
Sounds so horrible.
Sounds so upsetting.
It sounds dirty. It sounds like it involves something dirty and geriatric at the same time.
It reminds me of on 30 Rock when Jane Krakowski would sort of like talk about like the plastic surgeries that she'd had done, where she'd be like, "Oh well, I was away for a week because I was getting bone shaving," yeah, and you know, like what it sounds like. Sounds like that. It sounds like bone shaving. It's like a bad.
It's like the most
plastic surgery
horrifying term for a thing that we don't understand or know what it is.
No, we didn't bother to look either. We just saw it, became immediately
nothing
horrified,
more to do with
and then we moved on.
Smoothing.
They're also like raising some fees in 2024. Like, what is that? Classic maneuver, by the way.
Yeah.
And then, and also like they're adjusting some payment procedures for single employer pension plans. Like, I don't know. The pension smoothing. That's what they're doing.
They're pension smoothing.
It's gross.
But the compromise would end the benefits for people who made $1 million the previous year.
Which is sort of like,
all right.
No, but yeah, exactly. Well, and it's fine. Weird because like when I initially read that, I was like, oh, the Democrats probably were pushing for that probably.
Yeah.
But no, it was Tom Coburn.
Well,
who's still going to
vote
no.
Vote no, he's just being a jerk.
He fought for this. And also, it's like a total symbolic thing because like nobody who made $1 million the previous year is fine for unemployment. Basically, that makes up like $20 million of like the billions of dollars that we spend on. So it's like not even like a real thing. It's just like Tom Coburn's just trying to be a douche.
Yeah.
Successfully.
Well, and he's trying to make it sound like there's this big problem with millionaires getting unemployment benefits, which is not actually the case.
Right, but millionaires getting unemployment seems like a thing that the Republicans would be okay with, right?
No,
it's
poor
people. They don't want to get unemployment benefits.
Like, they would like to call it something besides unemployment benefits. They would like to give rich people that money under some sort of fake subsidy term.
Right, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Where they're like, it's a business subsidy enhancement fee or something, whatever.
Yeah.
Something like that. But they're trying to get one more Republican co-sponsor.
Right, at least. Just because right now,
it's the same, it's the usual suspect.
Anything can happen in the Senate. Yeah, it's exactly. It's like it's the five sort of like reasonables.
Like Murkowski and Susan Collins and like those people.
Yeah.
Rob Portman.
Yeah. So they need another one because right now, if all five of those Republicans do vote for it, like they say, they need all 55 Democrats.
Right.
And it's not actually these five Republicans who they're worried about because once the five Republicans are sort of like already have left their own party and they've co-sponsored the bill, they're fine.
Yeah. They're not going to not vote for the bill.
The problem is
the left.
is the left, which, fine. I mean, I want people to have their unemployment benefits, but the people on the
middle right can do this to us all the time. I don't see why the left can't do it too.
So the issue that the left is having is
that this is a weak bill.
It's a weak bill, and it only goes through the end of May. It's the middle of March. It goes for like a month and a half.
Like, why are we trying to hitch our star on some lame bill that goes for a fucking month and a half and requires pension smoothing? I mean,
I see it.
At the same time, I would like unemployed people to be able to get their benefits so they don't starve.
Well, exactly.
And turn to a life
of
crime.
Let's just ensure that they get them instead of instead of this sham.
This is absurd.
This is also a sham vote. The U.S. Senate can get up to some sham votes, too.
We've got Crimea, we've got North Korea, and we've got the U.S. Senate.
Right.
All three engaged in sham votes at the moment.
Yeah.
So that's a thing that's going to be causing us trouble long after.
Right. And then it has to go to the House.
Which is, like, not even a thing.
And they're going to add that you have to get drug tested.
Right.
And they're, I mean, like, that. Like, it's anybody's game.
Your name has to be checked against the terrorist watch list. They're going to have a lot of procedures that they need to see instituted before.
Yeah. A lot of amendments coming from the House on this unemployment benefit package.
And then they're still going to all vote no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Paul Ryan had this weird.
Well, he had an epiphany this week. Paul Ryan finally realized this week what the rest of the world has always known.
Right.
And it's that he is not an articulate man. That's what it is.
He was on Morning in America, which is a radio show hosted by Bill Bennett.
Don't go on there.
Don't go on there. But if you do go on there, don't say this. He's going on about something, and he starts complaining about a, quote, tailspin of culture, in our inner cities in particular, of men not working and just generations of men not even thinking about working or learning the value and the culture of work.
We don't need to explain why that's a problem right. to you.
He was saying a thing there that was offensive, but he was saying it, but not in a word or sentence that got him there.
No. I mean, that's just an offensive idea that he just had right, there, basically.
Which is, he's having a lot of those.
He's having a lot of those. Well, but anyway. It's interesting, though, because, like, it's hard because, like, obviously, like, there's, like, a lot of language that people sort of, like, see as coded language in here.
Yeah.
He's also sort of, I mean, he's...
It's about black people not liking to work, in case exactly. you need me to decode that for you.
Right.
That's what the coded language yes. is telling us.
Now, when you unpack this, like, there are things in there that, if worded differently, are not wrong and not offensive.
Sure.
You know, but that's not,
but that's not what he chose to do.
That's not what he did.
But instead of addressing the fact that he just used a bunch of coded language to make a racist comment yes. about people in inner cities not liking to work.
Right.
He just decided he was inarticulate and he couldn't be blamed.
Right. He realized the next day. He sent out a statement.
Right.
He said, after reading the transcript from my interview yesterday, I think is what he said, like, that he was, you know, he realized that it wasn't the most articulate thing.
No.
Which, no, it wasn't.
It wasn't. Mm-mm. It was the most offensive thing.
It was. Yes, indeed.
So now, he managed to accomplish that, at least.
Now, the reason that he sort of is talking about this anyway is that he is trying to address poverty issues, which...
It's this sort of lame attempt that he's making on behalf of the GOP, I feel like, to look like they care about poor people.
Right. Which, I mean, good, I
sure,
guess.
Sure.
He's going to have terrible ideas to address it. But, like, I think that whenever anybody is sort of like, look, poverty is not talked about enough. And
right.
if the Republicans want to come up with some harebrained ideas that we can even have a debate with them on, that's
right,
not even that's not even a debate that we're currently having.
Yeah.
So if Paul Ryan wants to go out and start saying stupid things like this because he's out on some, you know, tour across America talking to poor people that he has now discovered are all black and have been that way for generations,
right.
then that's something that we can start with. I was going to say that we can have a discussion about that.
Right. That's true. While he was busily not seeing those people, we couldn't talk about them because he didn't know what we were talking
right.
about.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in New Hampshire,
oh, boy.
We have a carpetbagging situation
yes,
going
we
on.
Do.
Scott Brown, who you may remember
was
as
a senator from Massachusetts.
The senator of Massachusetts. and then the failed actual senator from Massachusetts.
Yes.
The Liz Warren.
Right. He was
contender.
Accidentally elected
right.
in a special election when no one was watching.
Right. Exactly.
and then it became a real election year when there was
over.
A presidential election and everybody in Massachusetts was like, what the? Who is this joker?
Exactly.
What? He's a senator from here? That
yeah.
Can't. That
Turned
can't
out
be.
He wasn't a senator from there because
no,
though
no.
he was a senator of Massachusetts, he was not a senator from Massachusetts according to his new.
No.
idea.
Right. Well, because now his new permanent residence is a vacation home.
Right.
Which is
in
New Hampshire. And he grew up there,
yes.
I think. So, I mean, whatever.
So, one might ask whether his vacation home was not the Massachusetts
yes.
home that he was using. Mm-hmm. In any case, he's decided to run for Senate in New Hampshire. If you can't make it in
yes.
Massachusetts, why not just move a little
yeah,
north?
But he's announced that he's launching an exploratory committee. He released a like 90-second web video. He gave some speech at a GOP gathering in the state. Like, he's doing it. He's
doing
also
it.
Going on a weeks-long Main Streets and Living Rooms listening to her. Okay.
Horrifying.
Boy. But yes, he, of course, in this speech that he gave at this GOP gathering, he sought to sort of, like, address the carpetbagging situation because
right.
he referenced his long and strong family ties to the great state and
yeah.
noted that his famous truck, which he used in his campaign for his first Senate race, has live free or die license plates on it.
Which is a thing, first of all, did his campaign truck, was it a Massachusetts truck? Because that's who has live free or die license plates. Was he...
No, New Hampshire does.
Yeah, New Hampshire.
Oh,
right,
like...
Was he running for office in Massachusetts in a New Hampshire truck?
He shouldn't have been.
Okay, well, they don't have taxes there. Maybe,
maybe
he
means
like,
that truck now has lived free.
They're doing a lot of living free in New Hampshire to the degree that a lot of people are choosing to do their shopping over there.
Oh, really?
There's no tax.
There's no tax, right.
Yeah, if you live near the New Hampshire border, that's where you're doing your shopping.
Yeah.
You're not trying to do your shopping in Massachusetts
right.
where they tax everything.
It'll be interesting to see whether because he's running against Jeanne Shaheen,
right.
who's been in the Senate for a while.
Yeah.
For
a New Hampshire senator, it's also, like, fairly high profile, I feel like.
Yeah. I feel like he is the type of person who probably could win a Senate seat in New Hampshire. I mean, like, he's not... I don't know. I mean, he's not...
I feel like, unless you're Hillary Clinton, it is awfully hard to be that open of a carpetbagger.
Right.
I mean... And New Hampshire sort of, like...
They also sort of, like, have this... They pride themselves on being sort of, like, real rogue anyway. Yeah. So it's, you can't just sort of, like, waltz into New Hampshire of all places.
Yeah.
And, like, decide that, like, that's what you want to do. Because, like, it just doesn't seem like they'd be having it.
They might live free their way to the polls and...
Vote for Jean Shaheen again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they'll die on the way there because they don't have motorcycle helmet laws either.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
A lot of death goes along with living free. Mm-hmm. Just want to get that out there.
Yep, that's it.
Meanwhile, in other states in the Union, things have gone from bad to worse.
Oh my God. South Dakota. Just, first off.
Don't be there.
Don't be there. Don't have two Dakotas.
No.
You only need one. You don't need one.
One is sufficient, but that's
too much. I would contend that North and South Dakota should just band together with Nebraska and maybe, I don't know.
Something like Idaho or Montana somewhere. Some other states up there.
Yeah. And then only have two Senate seats.
Right.
And still have less
fewer people than New York City.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a reasonable plan.
That's what they should do. But anyway, they have this state senator, Phil Jensen, who's a Republican, as you would will be able to guess after we tell you what it is that he's trying to get passed in the state house. So he really liked that Arizona bill, and he had one of his own, but just way worse.
Right.
Because he went so far as to say that you could just openly discriminate against LGBT people. Like, you shouldn't just have to let...
You know,
the
Arizona thing was
like... The Arizona thing was sort of, like, coded in this sort of, like... I'm a religion,
can refuse service
and it's
to
sort
anyone
of like a,
kind
right.
of law.
And this is just sort of like, well, no, the gays just shouldn't... You shouldn't have to deal with them at all.
You shouldn't have to tolerate gays.
No, exactly. So, but then he was sort of, like, asked about it, and then he went on sort of, like, even... A dicier rant. Yes. Where he said, if someone were a member of the Ku Klux Klan and they were running a little bakery, for instance, which is genius, the majority of us would find it detestable that they refused to serve blacks. And guess what? In a matter of weeks or so, that business would shut down because no one is going to patronize
them. I would contend that that's not true in any of the Dakotas.
Not in any of the Dakotas. Or, I mean, I think that, you know, the free market didn't end slavery.
No,
the free market did not end separate but equal.
No.
The free market doesn't
end... The free market is remarkably adept, in fact, at dealing with this kind of discrimination in a way that allows it to continue for generations.
Correct. So he is wrong.
Those lunch counters were not dying for business from African-American customers, even though it would have improved their business.
Right. The white people did not find it so detestable that they were not eating there.
Yeah. No. Exactly.
That's not what was going on.
That's not what was happening.
Oh, boy.
This is a man who lives far away from any history.
Yes.
Can't necessarily know. And didn't know that the one thing that you could do that at this moment would be worse than talking about how it's okay to hate gays.
Right.
Is to go on a racist rant.
To go, okay, to hate black people right. now, too?
Like, how many years past the civil rights movement do we need to get
right.
for that to not... At least, like, let's at least agree that it's not okay to talk about that.
I know, right?
Like
who's referencing the Ku Klux Klan still?
People in the Dakotas.
And who was thinking about them having a bakery?
What did they serve at this bakery?
I don't know.
Who would come to the bakery?
I don't know.
Would the bakery be located? How little a bakery are we talking about?
I know.
I mean, there are so many questions.
A lot.
And is this some sort of bakery that would be in some way thematically related to being a Ku Klux Klan member?
Right.
Like, would there be, like, white sheets involved in some capacity? Because at that point, it's not a Ku Klux Klan bakery until the Ku Klux Klan is involved.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it's just a bakery owned by a racist.
Baking things over open flames.
Oh, God.
Oh. Sorry.
Too soon.
Yeah. Forever.
Forever.
Too soon. Forever.
It'll never be too late.
Yeah. What a douche. I'm sorry. And he also referenced, like, in his gay hatred, you know, he was said something about, like, as a follower of Jesus Christ. Oh, this is rich, too.
Yes, yeah.
As a follower of Jesus Christ, I'm commanded to love everybody. That doesn't mean I must condone the lifestyle choices that someone chooses. You know, just go fuck yourself.
Yeah, go
That's
fuck
it.
Yourself.
I don't have anything else profound to say about this douche.
Well, this is somebody who didn't even put enough thought into his God is love statement to realize that he was going to contradict himself in the second half of the sentence. So,
well, he went on to say the GLBT movement doesn't just want society's approval. They want their lifestyle choices applauded. They want standing ovations.
We do. Want standing ovations. Right. That's maybe the most true thing that he said so
That's
far.
It. Nailed it.
Finally. Yeah. At least he got something right.
Yeah. This was big news in the world of when I was thinking of you. When
I'm pleased.
Pulled this.
I know, and this brings all my loves together. Anti-fracking demonstrations and California, my medium love.
Right, exactly. And Jerry Brown. You love
Jerry Brown, my other love.
Yeah.
Well, and Jerry Brown has, to my own sadness.
I know. Chagrin.
Chagrin. There it is. has not been as anti-fracking as you want a person to be.
No.
He's actually been pretty openly supportive of fracking policies.
No, he's real into it.
Which is annoying and terrible.
Right.
And
he's also dedicated to fighting climate change, mysteriously.
Yes. So. He doesn't seem to think that those are related, I guess.
Which, he and Phil Jensen are both sort of...
Yeah, operating in the same school of logic.
Right.
Some sort of politician logic that we can't wrap our minds around.
Yeah.
But there was a huge protest in Sacramento.
Yeah.
A huge anti-fracking protest.
The biggest, they're saying, anti-fracking protest ever, called Don't Frack California. And they had, like, thousands of people at it. And it was, like, I saw pictures of it.
Exciting.
There were a lot of people at the...
Yeah, and that's... I mean, I would like to... point out that in New York City, you can have an anti-war protest that, you know, tens and hundreds of thousands of people show up to. Because there's 8 million people already in the city.
Yeah.
It is hard to get to Sacramento. It's not easy to get there. And the two major cities in California are very far apart.
Yeah.
So to have a huge protest in Sacramento takes some doing. Because it's not like you can even just take the train there. Like, if you want to go into New York City or go up to Albany from New York City... There's a train, there's an Amtrak train that goes directly there. It's, like, pretty easy to get to those places. If you want to do the same thing in California, you can take an 11-hour Amtrak trip if you want to, if you have all the time in the world on your hands.
Well, Sacramento's so far.
It's so far.
Yeah.
It's not close to anything.
No.
It's in a horrible part of the state. It's not like you can...
It's sort of close to San Francisco, but, like, also, like, kind of, like...
It's close to San Francisco the way that Albany is close to
New
York.
Not close enough that if you're in San Francisco, you're like, well, I'm just going to drive out for the day to go.
No, it's like, it's hours still.
Yeah, I think a couple of weeks,
yeah,
right?
I think it's like 2 or 3 hours away.
Yeah.
And San Francisco's not that big a city.
No, it's not.
L.A. is a big city. That's where the people are. People are in L.A.
Yes.
The tech sector is in San Francisco.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of everyone.
I know.
Good work, California.
Yes, I know.
Okay.
Oh, God. In this lesser news.
In more important
just
news.
Just as exciting news.
Certain sense.
So, Al Franken, every year, has a hot dish contest where he invites the entire Minnesota delegation.
Right.
So, it's a time for them to bond.
It's a bipartisan
The Republicans,
event.
The Democrats, everybody. Michelle Bachmann gets to come and share a laugh with Al Franken and pretend like she doesn't know Keith Ellison because he's a Muslim. And, you know, everybody can just get along for the day over their love of a hot dish.
Which is a thing that I've never heard of.
Right. I had to explain to Lila what it is. It's basically a casserole.
Right.
But it usually has a protein and a starch of some sort, and then canned soups.
Right. I would imagine that you can't make a hot dish without a canned
soup. You cannot. And if anybody is trying to do it, you've been duped.
Swindled.
Because you are not eating a real hot dish.
But it seems like maybe giving a hilarious name to your hot dish is part of the hot dish
You
culture.
Have to.
Yeah.
So, Representative Tim Walz was the winner, and he repeated. He's a two-time winner.
He's a good cook.
Yeah.
cook in air quotes.
Yeah. His dish was the turkey trot tater tot hot dish. That took first place. And tying for second was Amy Klobuchar's It's So Cold My Hot Dish Froze dessert hot dish.
I would contend
can't do that.
That that's not a thing.
She should have been immediately disqualified. She broke the rules.
You can't make a cold hot dish.
That's not it. And she tied with Representative John Klein, who is a Republican, his morning hot chow hot dish. That sounds upsetting.
Yes. It sounds like dog food, if you needed me to lay that out for you more specifically. Yeah.
But we'll go through all of the other recipes here, because some of them are real gems, let's just say.
Yeah.
So Senator Franken made Grandma Phoebe's Sunday supper hot dish.
Right.
We already discussed Klobuchar.
Right. Representative Peterson made Hunter's hot dish.
That's a boring name.
Yeah. McCollum made Minnesota wild rice and chicken hot dish.
Mm-hmm.
Bachmann made Polar Vortex Mex hot dish.
Hers is my favorite
name.
Because she, see what she did there? Vortex Mex?
Yeah.
She really did it.
She did it.
She didn't do it.
She didn't do it. No. Who did it?
I don't know. Somebody. But it was clever.
Her
bless
husband,
her heart.
Maybe. Somebody.
Yeah.
Ellison made Pride of the Fifth hot dish.
Ugh, boring.
Nolan made Rangers Hunting Camp hot dish.
Ooh, that sounds terrible.
Paulson made Grandma's Minnesota Nice Mock Lasagna.
Mock lasagna?
What is that?
Like, you're either making lasagna or you're not making lasagna. Also, the Rangers Hunting Camp hot dish, that
sounds suspect.
That's got pork and beans in it, is what that has in it.
Well, here's the thing, is that that sounds, to me, like the most... That's what I imagine people in Minnesota are eating. It's sure. around a campfire. They're eating a hot dish, whatever that is, that involves hunting camp foods like rice and beans.
Yeah. It's very similar to what Mama June makes on Honey Boo Boo. And she calls them her multi-meals.
Whoa.
Which are literally just like cans of things.
Ugh. Like in a casserole dish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Once you have a casserole dish, you can just...
Yeah.
Throw whatever in.
Yeah.
Speaking of horrible food choices that Americans are making, though.
Oh, God. Yes. And in final news.
Yeah. In here, final news,
by the way. So, Representative Paul Brown, spelled Broun, from Georgia. Also, he's a total nutbag. He is, he's an avid hunter, and he's got a ton of animal heads hanging in his office. Like, all of these animals that he's killed. And a lot of them are sort of, like, you know, crazy animals, because he's, like, gone to Botswana, and he's, like, goes and kills things in Alaska, and he sort of, like, travels all over the place killing things.
Right.
It's, like, his pastime, basically. He's also, like, the nutbag that has raffled off assault weapons. He has backed impeaching President Obama. He said that Democrats need illegal aliens to win in Georgia, and he also called evolution a lie straight from the pit of hell. Like, this guy is a real treat.
Yes.
I mean, he's great. So, anyway, BuzzFeed caught up with him.
And, like they do.
Like they do. And asked him to rank all of the animals that are hanging in his office by taste. Because why not?
Well, that's the greatest question someone could have asked him.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Oh, and he eats all of his kills out of respect for the animal.
Yes, you know how respectful you want to be after you've killed a red stag.
No. Anyway, so
he did it.
Yeah, he did it. So we're gonna start at the bottom.
Yeah.
There's nine of them. Mm-hmm. Number nine is the lion. He said it was a little chewy, but he did eat the lion's heart.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That guy.
Number eight, the Cape Buffalo.
Yeah, sure.
Didn't offer any sort of thoughts on
thoughts
that.
Thoughts on that.
That was just
next. Wasn't his favorite.
Nope. Mm-mm. Number seven is the eland, which is sort of like a deer-ish looking thing. Sort
right.
of. I think it's one African
of those animals.
Or something like that, basically. Yeah. He said it tasted very interesting.
Yes.
And then number six is the Nyala, which is another sort of deery looking thing. Yeah, it was very gamey, too.
Yeah.
So he says. That was his description. Very gamey.
Yeah.
Number five is the red stag.
Sure.
Number four was the Alaska Kodiak bear.
Of course.
Number three, a deer, which obviously, like, a deer is delicious. Like, let's just, I mean, you don't need
to. Call a spade a spade.
I mean, I'm surprised the eland and the Nyala weren't higher on the list. Basically just African deer.
It's like he's a deer racist. Like, foreign deer weren't good enough for
right?
him.
Like, how... Okay, so number two is a doll sheep. He got this one in Alaska. It was delicious. He said, so lean and tender.
God.
Okay. And number one... Really? The warthog?
Oh.
I mean... Quote, they fixed this up in a traditional African way. They roasted it over a fire and poured this delicious sauce all over him. All over him.
Ew.
Don't say that either.
No.
He said it was just great.
Sounds it.
I mean, a warthog number one on a list where you have a deer.
Lions, Kodiak bears, and Nyalas.
So don't be eating these things.
Don't have eaten any of these.
Right. And also, like, how you respect an animal like this, I get. Like, I get that, like, there's, like, the whole thing that's, like, big in the culinary world right now, where it's, like, farm, or, like, where it's, what's
farm
the like,
table?
Not
or,
farm to table, but,
like,
tail to, or not even that, but, like, you know, like, snout to tail, or whatever they call it, basically, where, like, because they've killed this animal, they feel sort of, like, this,
they have
like,
to use every
they have
part
to
of
use
it.
Every part of it, and so they, and, like, that on some sort of, like, crazy logic level, I get is somehow respectful, because, like, then you have sort of almost, like, you know, it's, like, it's like being an organ donor, sort
right,
of,
yeah.
I mean, on some level.
You've
it's
made...
not. It's different. But, like, he didn't kill a bear and then eat all, you know, 800 pounds.
No, and then make a rug
bear
out of
and
the
then
hide.
Like,
and then
that's
a...
not what he did. He, like, killed it and then had some bear steak and decided that it was gross and then, like, carried on with himself.
Yeah.
Like, that's not respectful to the animal. Like,
hunters have an interesting sense of what respect right. is.
Yes,
and involves. And that's the news for the week.
That's it.
If you want to hear our further thoughts on the Malaysia Airlines excitement, we'll be back next week, probably with more of them.
We won't have found it. No. I guarantee you, we won't know where that plane is next week.
No, no one's going to know where that plane
Watch is. Watch CNN all week.
And learn nothing.
Learn nothing and learn everything.
Right. And get to see what it's like when your favorite news anchors play with a toy plane.
I know. For 24 I'm excited to see what they add come this up week. With. Yeah. They need to just keep going. Like, I feel like they always do well, like, when they do this crazy nonsense. Yeah, like I said, like, the poop crew is, like, really cool for them. Like, they need to, like, have, like, you know, they need to bring back the hologram. They need to sort of, like,
they need to embrace
have,
it.
Yeah, exactly. They need to have someone, like, operating a flight simulator with like 3D graphics yes. and like I mean I just they just
showing throw... us what buttons you would need to push to turn off the transponder.
They did that.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Good.
No, they did that. They showed you how to do that.
Oh no.
Yes. Oh Why? My god. No, they. I know.
It's like they just have run out of.
Oh, they run long out of all ran of out. Long ran out. I mean, they have.
Oh man.
They posited that God took the plane.
Yeah, they got to
week.
The point where they went down the Fox News route and just went with God.
Yeah,
couldn't come up with answers.
No,
and they were looking for them.
It was Don Lemon too. Of all
I know.
People.
Said like he was just giving up. He was probably like, I don't want to talk about this fucking plane anymore.
No, he couldn't.
He was just over it. He was like, it was an act of God. It's over.
Right. Oh boy.
In any case, we will see you next week.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.